Good morning, everyone. So, have you had a good conference so far? Excellent. So, my name is Ganesh Srinivasan. I'm a program manager in the Azure networking team, and I work on hybrid technologies, the stuff that we're going to talk about. I also have John Ormond, our director of networking from Microsoft IT, and Jay Desai from StoreSimple. Both of them will be joining me later in the session today, and we'll talk about a lot of stuff that we've been working on for the past few months. It's been an exciting time for us. The networking team in Azure specifically have put out a lot of releases this year, and ExpressRoute is one of them. We've been working on it for quite a while now, and it's really great to see this service out in production as a generally available service. So it's going to be great today. So we're going to talk about four different things today. I'm going to start the presentation by giving you a quick overview of what we have in terms of virtual networks and connectivity. Once that is done, I'll do a little bit of a deep dive into what ExpressRoute is, how you can set up ExpressRoute circuits to connect your premises to Azure without having to go through the public internet. I'll do a quick demo of that to show you how to set up circuits, and once you've set it up, what it takes to connect between your premises and the cloud. I'll then have John Ormond from Microsoft IT. John is the director of our IT infrastructure. He's one of our first customers and probably the largest customer at this point in time with more than about 100 circuits connecting our corporate network with Azure. And he'll talk about how it's helping our IT organization essentially move to the cloud faster. And there's a white paper, there's a case study that we've handed out to some of you. If you did not get a chance, you can feel free to come by and pick up a copy of the case study. We also have Jay Desai from StoreSimple. StoreSimple is an appliance that helps you. It's a storage appliance that sits in your premises. It indexes and backs up data into the cloud. So Jay is going to talk about the use cases and how you can use StoreSimple to achieve one of our scenarios that I'll be talking about, which is how you index and back up data in Azure. And it exposes a whole bunch of new use cases on how you can use storage appliances in the cloud. So let's get started. So before we announced ExpressRoute, we had virtual networks, and we had two ways to connect to virtual networks. Virtual networks are essentially islands in the cloud that you set up with your own address space. They're essentially secure network boundaries with your own address space, and you can treat them as a flat layer 3 network within which you can deploy virtual machines and cloud services into Azure. Now, it comes with a lot of cool properties that enable you to build essentially multi-tier applications. I'll talk about them in a bit. But a lot of people want connectivity to their virtual networks that are running in the cloud. So be it for dev test cases or be it running production workloads in Azure and you need connectivity back to your premises. So we have different kinds of connectivity options that we support in the platform. We start with what we call as point-to-site connectivity. This is a cool capability that essentially enables you to VPN in from your any machine wherever you're sitting into Azure using what we call as point-to-site VPN. It's essentially using inbox VPN technology that's built into Windows client and Windows server. It uses this protocol called SSTP, Secure Sockets Tunneling Protocol. So it essentially enables you to tunnel through proxies and NATs and firewalls and get to Azure in a secure way. That way you have access to all the private network, the virtual network that's running in Azure. This has been great because this technology essentially enables you to run proof of concept and dev test scenarios very fast. You don't have to wait for a lack of a better word, the IT organization blocking you from establishing connectivity to the cloud. So it's a very straightforward way. It looks like a SSL connection from your machine to Azure. So it's been great. We announced general availability about a month back, and we've had several thousands of people using this in production today. So once you've done with your proof of concept, you want to essentially extend your premises into Azure, and whatever you set up in Azure, you want it to talk back to your premises. In that case, you want a slightly more robust solution, a secure solution that links your entire premises to Azure. You could use site-to-site VPN to accomplish that. So we support site-to-site VPN connectivity between your premises and Azure over IPsec, so you can essentially establish a secure tunnel and have IP-level connectivity between your premises and Azure. So while site-to-site VPN helps you move to the cloud, there are certain restrictions in terms of throughput and there are certain limitations in terms of how you can achieve high availability in the platform. To address those deficiencies in our platform and to make sure that the connectivity solution that you use is something that you can trust, something that comes with an SLA, and something that you can use to connect to all services that we host in Azure, we came up with this new service called ExpressRoute. And we'll spend majority of the time today talking about ExpressRoute. I went through the basic overview of what a virtual network is. There's another special use case that you can use a virtual network for, which is you really don't have to have any connectivity back to your premises. You can have it as a standalone entity that runs in Azure, and you can deploy services into it. It offers a lot of cool benefits in the sense that you bring your address space, you set up and control DNS registration, it has static IP addresses for your virtual machines, so the IP addresses never change for your virtual machines. So you can use that to run your domain controllers and DNS servers and so on. It extends the trust boundary from that of a single cloud service to whatever you deploy within a virtual network. So if you're building multi-tier applications with shared database tiers and so on, virtual networks enable you to do that. So as part of this release, we actually, you know, virtual networks with site-to-site and point-to-site existed for a long time. There were a few new enhancements that we made to the platform. First thing being having the ability to connect virtual networks within the same region or across regions. There are a couple of use cases. I'll highlight each one of them. The first use case that I wanted to highlight is the ability to connect virtual networks within Azure. So let's say there are several use cases. First thing is you want to isolate different tiers and put them in different networks. You can put them all in different virtual networks and connect each virtual network to one another in the same region over IPsec. So it gives you a secure point of connectivity between two virtual networks and a throat to choke if you're concerned about security and you want to cut off tiers between one side and the other. The other thing that you can do is you have multiple subscriptions for resource constraints or for billing constraints. You want to have them as separate subscriptions. You want to deploy virtual machines, but you want to have IP level connectivity between these virtual machines that are deployed within the same region. You can use this technology to do the same thing. If you link virtual networks to each other that are within the same region, it's free of cost for you. We do not charge for data transfer back and forth. Another scenario where people like to use this, and another scenario that people would like to use us for is to have connectivity between the virtual network you have in Azure and a lot of on-prem sites. When we started off with virtual networks, we restricted the ability to connect to only one premises on your side to Azure. And that was a big restriction where it did not allow you to connect from multiple branch offices into Azure. We've lifted that restriction so you can connect up to 10 different on-prem sites from Azure using the site-to-site VPN technology. Now, 10 is a limit that we put in place to make sure that you don't overwhelm the VPN. If you have a requirement for a larger number of sites, please do come and talk to us, and we can talk about solutions and how we can help you with that. We also support the ability for you to have virtual network to virtual network connectivity. Now, what we've done with this is we've made one virtual network look like a site to another virtual network. So you could either connect to another virtual network or your premises, and it looks and feels the same way for us. A lot of people running in cloud-only mode or those who want to have DR capabilities in the platform essentially want to run their services on virtual networks in two different regions. They want private IP level connectivity between the two regions going through the Microsoft Core network. Now, this solution enables you to achieve that. So if you want to do DR, you can run half of your services in, let's say, US East, and the other half, or a replica of that, in US West, and have an IP level connection between the two virtual networks that you're running in Azure. That way, it's full IP level connectivity, and you're isolated and you're protected against any failures that you may have on either of the regions. So these are cool technologies. They're very simple to use. How to set things up and how to use them have all been documented in microsoftazure.com. If you go to virtual networks and tutorials, you would see how to set things up. There's a step-by-step guide along with samples on how to configure these virtual networks. We're also happy to, you know, constantly keep adding VPN partners. We have about 12 partners or 12 to 15 partners right now, and as and when a partner says their VPN device is available, we validate them with the partner's help, and we say that it's a known compatible device. This way, the partner knows that it works. If you have any issues with support, the partner understands what it takes to connect to Azure, and you would be able to call them and have your issues with VPN connectivity worked out with them. So with that, I'm going to move to the cool new technology that we announced is generally available on Monday. It is ExpressRoute. So we picked the name ExpressRoute because it's like jumping on the HOV lane, bypassing all the crowd and traffic that you have in the public internet. So it gives you a faster path into the cloud, bypassing the congestion of the internet. Just to reiterate the statement that I just said, all the connectivity technologies that we've supported in the platform to date go through the public internet. So we offer you secure connectivity through the internet into virtual networks and services hosted in Azure. But essentially, the fact that it goes through the internet means that it's going through a path that's not being controlled by anyone. So it means that no one's giving you guarantees on latencies, jitter, throughput, packet loss, or any of the metrics that you really care about and that you want to put your business in line for. Also, there are lots of choke points, so it's really unpredictable, but it works. It's secure because we use IPsec, but a lot of people have resistance in adopting the cloud because of the fact that it still looks like an external entity and it's not part of their trusted network. What ExpressRoute does is it puts Azure right in your private network, in your WAN or your private network that you have that you either manage yourselves or you use a third-party service provider to essentially establish connectivity between your branch offices. So what we've tried to do is make Azure look like just another branch office in your network. So that way, it integrates with your core routing infrastructure. It looks and feels just like another branch office. You bring the address ranges into Azure, and you can consume all Azure services through this ExpressRoute circuit that you set up between your premises and the cloud. So it addresses a lot of key concerns that customers had in the past to adopt the cloud. The first thing is that it's through a predictable path. I'll talk about the various options that you have, but it gives you a very predictable path. So you could essentially choose the option, and in either option that you pick for ExpressRoute, you know the path that you're taking to come to the cloud. It's through a trusted service provider, or you directly pair with us through a colo facility like Equinix. In either case, it's a predictable path, so you know what performance you're going to get because you pay for it, and someone's there giving you guarantees for that. It's secure. It bypasses the internet. Carriers provide you with SLAs on isolation and guarantee. We do the same. You can, you know, with site-to-site VPN, it's always dependent on crypto. IPsec is crypto-heavy. It's very hard to push the CPU on these gateways to accomplish hundreds of megabits per second or gigabit per second speeds. So with ExpressRoute, you can go up to 10 gigabits per second between your premises and the cloud in an active-active configuration. So you could technically push up to 20 gigabits per second if you chose to do so in our platform. And you could buy multiple circuits from us if you wanted larger bandwidth. We go all the way from 10 megabits per second to 10 gigabits per second per ExpressRoute circuit. So it's a wide bandwidth range. You pick what you choose, and we will enable it for you. It's private, it's isolated, it's secure. We've also tried to price our services in a way where there's price predictability. So in a lot of cases, depending on the use cases, you can have substantial savings in terms of your cost, in terms of the data transfer between your premises and the cloud. If you're backing up large volumes of data and are reading it and so on, so there are select cases where it makes a lot of sense. So the key difference, or another key feature about ExpressRoute, is the fact that we enable connectivity to all services hosted in Azure, not just services hosted in virtual networks. So you could connect to Azure Storage, Azure Media Services, websites, HD Insight, SQL databases. You name the service, we enable connectivity to those services through ExpressRoute. So it opens you up to use the cloud for a whole bunch of workloads. Storage, backup, and recovery is a key scenario. We'll have Jay up on stage in a bit to talk to you all about how StorSimple is one use case for how you can accomplish backup and recovery scenarios. Most people try the cloud for dev test scenarios. We've had a lot of people try it out so far. It's a key scenario for the cloud at this point in time. We have HD Insight, which is a service that does Hadoop and big data analysis. You could use that in other HPC workloads. We have Azure Media Services, where we have a lot of media houses wanting to use us for media transcoding and things like that. So that's a key scenario. I'll show you certain things in the demo as part of my talk where you'd see that the latency between your premises and the cloud is a controlled factor. It's a predictable number. So you can build applications that are tolerant to certain levels of latency between your premises and Azure. And so you can split your application where some tiers can sit in your premises and some tiers can run in Azure. You can mix and match them and gradually migrate them to the cloud or have them in that mixed configuration for as long as you want. And one of the biggest workloads that we've had interest in the platform for is SharePoint. That's one of the demos that I will be showing. And it works really well. So going back to the flavors of ExpressRoute or the two options that we offer in ExpressRoute and contrasting it to what we had with site-to-site VPN. Site-to-site VPN goes through the internet and you still have secure private connectivity between your premises and Azure. Now with the exchange provider model, we have two flavors in ExpressRoute. The first one is called the exchange provider model. How many of you were in the talk yesterday where we talked about Equinix and how Equinix enables connectivity between your premises and Azure? So that's one flavor of ExpressRoute, where you could go to a colo facility such as Equinix, deploy your gear, get Ethernet connectivity into their facility, and then have your networks paired with us through the cloud exchange that Equinix offers. That's one option for you. The other option is to go through your service provider, telco service provider, be it AT&T or Verizon or whoever offers your MPLS VPN or VPLS VPN, linking all your branch offices. We will integrate with them, or we've integrated with some of them already, and that allows you to extend your network and make Azure a part of your WAN. So what are the advantages and disadvantages, or what would make you go one way or the other? These are two different technologies, essentially managed, and you know the look and feel of it from the Azure side is the same thing, but they offer different distinct benefits. So if you're someone who's trying to push large volumes of data, 10 gigabits per second or multiple one gigs of data between your premises and the cloud, or if you're really interested in having a direct peering relationship with Microsoft and you want complete control over how packets flow between our network and yours, exchange provider model, you know, the model that we work with with Equinix is a great way to go. On the other hand, if you don't want to do a lot of configuration, you trust your telco service provider who's been offering the service for you for years. You just want to extend your network into Azure through them. Zero additional hardware deployment. Very minimal additional configuration on the software side to get this going. You have the network service provider scenario. A good example would be if you're using one of the VPN flavors with AT&T and you just want to extend your core network into Azure through this technology, you would use this option. We've announced partnerships with several key service providers, both on the exchange front and on the network service provider front. This is just the starting list that we announced when we announced general availability. Equinix, you know, we've announced that we are going to go into 16 locations with Equinix pretty soon. We start with 3. I'll show you the list of locations. We've also partnered with Telecity. Telecity is a strategic partner for us in the Europe space. So we are partnering with Telecity in that front. Those two are your initial options if you wanted to connect to Azure in the exchange provider framework. On the network service provider front, we've partnered with several carriers. We've partnered with AT&T, Verizon, Level 3, British Telecom, and Singtel. And each of them provide coverage in different market segments, and some of them are global with us. So you could, if you're already an existing customer of any one of these partners with whom we've announced the service with, you can talk to us or them directly and have the service enabled for you right now. If you're not with any of them, no worries. Talk to us. We will figure out a way to enable connectivity into Azure through other solutions that we have and through potential partnerships that we're working with other carriers. So for the exchange provider model, we have a predictable, you know, options where you can choose your bandwidth option. We configure these circuits per those bandwidth options that you pick. Ingress or connectivity into Azure, you can push how much ever data you want. It's absolutely free. We have some bundled bandwidth as part of each option that's included on your egress, and anything you exceed beyond that, you pay a nominal charge for the bandwidth overage. So you can go anywhere from 200 megabits per second to 10 gigabits per second. We have a similar model for network service providers. We start with 10 megabits per second and go up to a gigabit per second. And it's, you know, the difference in the billing model is that it's unlimited bandwidth in and out. You pay one single fee and you get both options. We also have an SLA for this service. You know, we want to make sure that you can trust this connectivity and take a dependency on it to run your mission critical and production workloads. So there's a 99.9% uptime SLA that we offer for this service. So once you have it connected, you can trust us and we'll keep it up. To achieve this SLA, we actually configure our routers in active-active configuration. We always configure redundant pairs of routers. They're load sharing. And even if one of the servers goes down on either side, on the carrier side or your side or on our side, there's always a redundant path that's available that can take the full load. So you can trust that, not worry about the fact that there's very little likelihood that both will go down at the same time. So we call that HA. You can order circuits in different peering locations, which we will see in a minute, that will give you full DR capability. So if you connect with us in multiple locations, we'll look at the map in a bit, you can connect to any Azure region within that continent. So for example, if you connected with us in US East, or what we call Washington, D.C. for peering, you could connect to all the Azure regions that are hosted in the US. The same way, if you connected to us in London, you could connect to both our data centers that we host in Europe. And we plan to do the same thing when we launch our services in Asia. So as of today, we have our service offered in three different locations. One is Silicon Valley, Equinix Silicon Valley, Washington, D.C., and London. There are other locations that we are going to add pretty soon. We've announced with Equinix that we're going into a lot more locations than this. So stay tuned for updates from us in terms of the locations that we will be adding. I mentioned earlier that, you know, we offer connectivity to all Azure services. There's a key point to note. There are two kinds of services that you can have in Azure. One is essentially compute, virtual machines and cloud services, which essentially can run within a virtual network. So you bring your own address space. It's a private network. It's private address space. You want connectivity for that into your core network. You can do that. And at the same time, you have services like storage, websites, media services that are all hosted on public IP address endpoints that, you know, you also want connectivity to from your premises. We wanted to keep them separate and clean in a way where your connectivity to storage and media services and services hosted on a public endpoint could go through your extranet network, and traffic to your core network could go in a separate network. So we have two separate routing domains for every express route circuit. We use BGP. We have two pairs of BGP sessions for every express route circuit you set up, and we exchange routes between our premises and you. For every virtual network you create and link to an express route circuit, we will advertise those prefixes through BGP to you. BGP is Border Gateway Protocol. It's a routing protocol that's an industry standard for exchanging routes between your network and ours. And for the public peering part, which is all the public services hosted in Azure, when you establish that BGP peering with us, we will publish all the Microsoft Azure public prefixes through that BGP session. So that way, you have all the routes to connect to us. You can modify them, handle them the way you want within your network to have packets routed into Azure through that peering that you set up. So a simple use case that I wanted to show and to highlight the fact that public and private are slightly different. The first option is you have a virtual network in Azure that you want to connect to your premises. Set up an express route circuit. We'll see how to do that next. And you have no NATs in the path. You have private IP to private IP connectivity, BGP for routing, and it's resilient. You can connect to the internet. We by default do what we call a split tunneling. Traffic to the internet goes directly to the internet. Traffic to your premises goes through this express route circuit. If you advertise default routes to us, we will always send traffic back to you, and you can route it through your proxies to the internet if you don't want us to directly put the packets onto the public internet. So you can make Azure and your virtual network in Azure look like a natural extension of your premises, of your back-end data center into Azure. You can also connect to other services like, you know, storage. And if you wanted to absolutely monitor every traffic going to that, you can route them back to your premises, inspect and route them back into Azure, or have them directly connect to Azure. It's all magic that you play in BGP. Depending on the routes you advertise to us, you can choose how you want to route your packets between services within Azure and between your premises and Azure. So what does it take to set up an express route circuit? we announced general availability, so you're already signed up for Express Route as a service. If you have an Azure subscription, you can just go ahead and create Express Route circuits, and I'll show you how. The first thing you do is essentially ask us and say, hey, list all the service providers that you offer services in all the locations. I'll show that in a demo pretty soon. Once you get that, you get what we call as a service key. It's a unique identifier that identifies your connection request. You pass that on to the service provider. The service provider in the back end, be it Equinix or Telecity, queries us, gets information about your request, goes, programs their Ethernet exchange, and creates a virtual cross-connect between your gear in their cages, or whether it's an Ethernet port terminating there, and Azure. And once that's done, they hand it back to you to set up BGP. Once you set up BGP routes between your gear and our routers in these edge sites, you have IP level connectivity going back and forth. The experience is very similar when you work with a WAN provider like AT&T. You may have an AT&T VPN, and I'll show you how to do this. The key exchange and everything is very straightforward and very similar. The key difference is that since you've already established BGP and routes with the carrier, they will take care of configuring the routing between your VPN network and our routers. That way, you don't have to worry about routing if you don't want to do anything that front. So let me, I just talked about how you do that. Let me actually show you how this can be done. So I'm going to be showing you how to set up Express Route through a very short demo. So the first thing I'm going to do is first list all the service providers. This command lists the service providers and the various locations in which you can actually request a service. Now, for the sake of this demo, I'm going to create a small circuit with AT&T. I'm going to say that I want to connect my Microsoft corporate network to the AT&T network. And the way I do that is I ask for a new circuit using PowerShell. I give the circuit a name. I want a 10 megabits per second circuit for the demo. I'm going to do it in Silicon Valley. And I wanted to do it through AT&T. Now, what this does is it makes sure that you have sufficient capacity in our routers, and AT&T has sufficient capacity in their routers. Once it's done that check, it's going to give me what is called as a circuit service key. It's a GUID. It uniquely identifies the service request. So you can use that service request, log into AT&T, and order a circuit. As you can see, our IT guys are pretty gutsy. They give an engineer like me access to Microsoft's production network. So I'm going to try to do my best not to screw up their network, but that's the amount of trust that our IT organization has in this technology. So we made this request. We got a service key. It's this GUID that uniquely identifies this service request. So this is what I need to pass to AT&T to complete my service provisioning. I log into the AT&T portal. Okay, so here I am. I logged into AT&T. AT&T calls this NetBond. It's a service that they offer to you where you can connect to multiple cloud providers. I have already linked this service to the Microsoft network in two locations, one in Washington, D.C., and the other in Silicon Valley. But just for the sake of this demo, I'm going to create a new peering. The first thing you do is you create what is called as a VNC. I want to connect to Microsoft in US West. I'm going to call it TechEd Demo. Microsoft has several VPNs. I'm going to connect to Microsoft IT1. This is, trust me, the production VPN network that's connecting several branch offices in the US. I'm going to do a 10 megabits per second commit, and I'm going to create it. So this VNC has been created, and I can assign a VLAN to essentially connect my traffic between my network and Azure. The first thing I need to do is provide an address range to configure the routing relationship between Microsoft and the AT&T routers for this MSIT VPN network. John was nice enough to give me some IP addresses. I have to give it a name. And here is where I provide the service key that we just generated, and I say submit. I'm sorry about that, but what should have technically happened, okay, it's happening right now, is that it's on the AT&T side, it's talking to our service provider, service infrastructure, getting information based on the service key, configuring the AT&T routers on their side, and we are at the same time configuring routers on our side. In a few seconds, which I don't want to wait right now, we will have end-to-end connectivity between the two routers. So in a matter of 5 minutes, you can have connectivity between your premises and Microsoft through Express Route. So I'm running this demo from my corporate, from my machine that's domain joined to the corporate network. I have already created virtual networks in my subscription, and I've linked them to the existing circuits that I have with AT&T. So if I just go onto virtual machines, there are about 5 virtual machines, some in US East and some in US West. They have a 172 dot, which is a private IP address. So what I'm going to do next is I'm going to ping this IP address from my corporate domain joined machine. This machine is VPNed in into our corporate network right now, and I'm going to ping the virtual machine that's attached to the network using the AT&T infrastructure. As you can see, I have full IP level connectivity and ICMP level connectivity. This is me connecting from here through the Microsoft corporate network into the US East data center through Express Route. And this is me connecting between my machine and a virtual machine running in the US West data center. As you can see, we have good bidirectional connectivity between the corporate network and the virtual machines that I run in Azure. I wanted to show one more quick thing before I handed it off to John to take things further. We set up a SharePoint farm in Equinix. This is the different flavor. This is the Exchange provider flavor. We have a cage in the Solution Validation Center where we have a bunch of virtual machines running. We have a full SharePoint farm running there. And just to show you how the low latency of the link between the virtual network that's running in US West and the Silicon Valley location of Equinix, it's consistently 1 or 2 milliseconds. It's between 1 and 2 milliseconds. So this is as good as having two virtual machines running in the same data center, you know, at different ends of the data center. So that's how low latency and how throughput, you know, how high a throughput you can get through this. So this full SharePoint farm is running in a way where some instances are on-prem, some instances are in Azure. And this is just the Hyper-V on which I've hosted all these platforms. So technically speaking, this is the SQL server that's offering you connectivity. So it's a SQL cluster where one instance is running on-prem and the other instance running in Azure. Currently, the primary is running in Equinix, and the standby is running in Azure. And I'm going to fail over from what's running on-prem into Azure just to show you how fast things fail over between these two sites. I'm connecting to the database. I don't want any data loss, and I say, go, failover. Takes a few seconds, and we are done. So right now, the primary SharePoint, the SQL server servicing the SharePoint farm is the SQL server that's running in Azure. And you won't see any performance issues connecting to the SharePoint site that you have running in Azure. So it's pretty fast and snappy. That's how easy it is to basically set up connectivity between your premises and Azure. If you want low latency, you can go with an exchange provider model. Convenience and extensibility of your network service provider, easy. What I want to do next is have John Ormond, who's the director of our IT organization for networking, to come and talk to you about how ExpressRoute is helping them move serious enterprise workloads into Azure.
Thank you, Ganesh. So as Ganesh said, my name is John Ormond. I'm Director of Network Architecture for MSIT. And I'd like to talk a little bit about what MSIT is inside of Microsoft. So these are some by the numbers for the MSIT organization inside of Microsoft. We are the IT organization that any corporation would have. We run the HR apps, the LCA apps, the sales and marketing applications. It's everything that the Microsoft employees use to build products and services. So we're not hosting Bing or Xbox or Azure or Office 365, but we are supplying the networks and the connectivity that allows the people that are building those things to build those products and run them and operate them. So some of the interesting numbers here, 200,000 devices hit our wireless network a day, 4.5 million remote access connections a month. So we've got a pretty active network. Where we have the biggest need for Azure, specifically ExpressRoute, is around the middle green and red boxes. So our environment is made up of around 1,300 line of business applications. So those are the HR apps, the SAPs, the data warehouses that run Microsoft. All right, so most of these are individually homegrown built apps, internal. Some of them are packaged software, but everybody at Microsoft thinks they're a developer. So a lot of these are homegrown, just shadow apps that have come into the light and that IT now has to support. That we're managing on in the red box around 40,000 OS instances. Over 65% of those are virtual OS instances, so we do a fair amount of virtualization. But 40,000 servers is what it takes to run, again, the internal Microsoft network and application infrastructure. This is not Azure or Office 365. They have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of servers that do all of the externally facing stuff. But this is the internal IT department that runs the corporation, runs the enterprise. So as many enterprises, we have a lot of budget constraints. Microsoft has a lot of money, but IT doesn't get a lot of it. So one of the things that I'm forced to do is save every penny and have a really good return on my investment. And that's where Azure comes in. Recently, well, I guess the economic downturn a few years ago, we stopped buying servers for a while because we were really crunched for budget in IT. And then when things got a little looser, we bought a bunch of hardware. So we had a really big hardware spend about 5 years ago. And that hardware is starting to get old now. End-of-life hardware. Time to replace that hardware. So we've got a really large capital expenditure bow wave that's coming. Over the next 5 years, for IT, it's going to be around $200 million. And that's money that leaves the corporation and goes to EMC, to Dell, to HP. Sorry if you work for those companies. I don't want to send that money outside of my company. All right? I need to preserve that capital. So where there's a really big push right now to move as many of these OS instances as we can up to the public cloud. In our case, Microsoft Azure. Our goal is to get 80% of the 1,300 apps that are internal pushed up to public Azure. Many of these are small apps that we don't want to spend a lot of time re-architecting for PaaS or migrating to SaaS. One of my favorite apps to pick on is Beverage Tracker. If you've seen the coolers outside that have the cans of free soda, we have those on every floor of every building around the world at Microsoft. And Beverage Tracker is a little app that the guy that fills the sodas up marks down how many sodas we're drinking. Coke Zero, most popular drink at Microsoft, over a million cans a year drunk. So Beverage Tracker, I don't want to spend time on that app at all. So with IaaS, Infrastructure as a Service in Azure, I can take those VMs that are running that application, do what we call lift and shift, and just push it up to the cloud. I've migrated that app up, I don't have to focus on it, and I can do that with fairly minimal resource time to migrate that up. Now, to do this many servers and that many applications, I need a really robust network connection. And that's where ExpressRoute and the demo that I'll show you comes in. So for our servers, we want to get about 95% into the cloud. Now, when I say the cloud, that's both our private cloud and the Azure public cloud. We have had for quite a few years a highly virtualized environment, but we didn't have the management layer on top of it to make it a true cloud. So if you look at the NIST definition of a cloud, there's five essential characteristics. We had three, but we were missing that self-service and that rapid elasticity. With Windows Azure Pack, we just put that on top of our existing System Center infrastructure, and presto magic, we now have a private cloud. So we're going to be migrating a lot of our servers on-prem to that WAF infrastructure, but the majority of our servers we're pushing up to Windows Azure, Microsoft Azure. So to talk a little bit about my group specifically, and I'm not going to spend too much time on this slide, this is our network. So we have 9 data centers that we manage those 40,000 servers and 1,300 apps in. These are around the world. 2,300 routers, 7,000 switches, 21,000 access points. It's a fairly sizable network. Two of my favorite bullets on the right-hand side, 50,000 strands of dark fiber in the Puget Sound campus alone. Developers use a lot of bandwidth. And then our internet, egress, 22 gigabits per second. Generally, that's our sustained traffic averages for the whole company going out to the internet. Again, this isn't Xbox or Office 365. These are developers developing, listening to Pandora, watching Netflix, all the other important work that they do in the product groups that sustain 22 gigabits per second of traffic. So one of the things that we needed to do not only was to get our traffic up to Azure, we needed to take some load off the user edge. Hopefully you got a pamphlet when you came in. That flyer is a case study that we did about migrating our traffic off of the user edge and onto ExpressRoute so that true internet traffic would go out that user edge, but the stuff that is more internal in nature would go across the ExpressRoute connection. And so we're trying to drive traffic down off our user edge and to that to the private connection. So with that, I'm going to switch over. Am I 8? To 8. All right, as Ganesh mentioned earlier, the service key. I wanted to talk a little bit about the service key. That is a very critical piece in the ExpressRoute transaction. So ExpressRoute is really a connection between three separate entities. This is using the network service provider model. So if you go through a telco like AT&T, there are three corporate entities. There's yourself, your company, which is the Azure subscriber at the top, Microsoft Azure, and your service provider. In our case, it's a telco, or we've got an internal telco that is me, and I'll talk more about that. The key, service key, that keeps everybody on the same page is that service key. So it's critical that everybody uses that key to let the telco, when they're talking to Azure, know they're talking about your specific circuit. Or when you're talking to Azure, it lets Azure know exactly what we're talking about. So that's kind of the correlation event that connects all three corporate entities together that makes ExpressRoute happen. So in this demo, I'm going to do a quick request of a circuit key. I'm going to show you how we provision it internally. I'm going to build a VNet, and then we'll actually link that circuit to the VNet, which makes that connectivity complete. And then I'll log on to a VM to show you kind of how all that connectivity, what it looks like to somebody on our corporate network. Let's go to... So if you look at just the default documentation on the web, so if you Bing Azure PowerShell, you can actually see they'll talk about doing a get publish file and import publish file. I really personally, this is my personal opinion, does not reflect Microsoft overall, but my personal opinion, I really don't like that model. Every time anybody connects to your subscription, it creates a management certificate. And if you have to manage a lot of subscriptions, your subscription or your certificate page and your subscription will get very long, and they're a little obscure as to who manages what. So what we've done as Central IT is come up with a few managed certificates that we will give out to folks that allow them to set up their subscription using this management certificate, and it's quite a bit easier to... let me turn off notifications. It's quite a bit easier to manage your subscription certificates if you have a centrally managed certificate service. So I've got both our production service, our cert, and our dev cert on here. And then what you can do with PowerShell is you can call your subscription ID, you can give it a name, you can give it that certificate thumbprint, and it's a much easier way to connect to your subscription in PowerShell. So I guess a couple questions just so that I know what kind of lingo to use. How many people use PowerShell? All right, that's pretty good. How many people program to REST APIs? A little less. All right, I'll focus more on PowerShell than REST. I'm a fan of the REST APIs that Azure is built on. We do a lot of internal apps that use that REST API. The beautiful thing is the PowerShell uses the exact same REST APIs, so it's very compatible both ways. So the first thing that I'm going to do here is just set the subscription that I'm using. I'll use the variables that I just talked about, the subscription ID, I'll give it a name, and then the thumbprint. One of the things that you also have to do with ExpressRoute comes with the Azure download. If you Bing Azure downloads, you can download the PowerShell SDK. However, the ExpressRoute module does not load automatically. So you have to run a statement to import that module into PowerShell. The next thing that this script does is it goes and gets that certificate that's already been installed on my machine. Then it sets the Azure subscription, selects it, and then I always do a get current just so that I make sure that I'm working on the right subscription. I work on many different subscriptions at Microsoft. We've got many IT towers internal to our IT group, and each one has their own subscriptions. Since we have management certs on all of them, I can do nefarious thing to all my brother IT people. But I want to make sure that I'm working on the right subscription. So when I run this script, this doesn't actually hit Azure. It's just configuring PowerShell locally. But it shows I've got all the right endpoints, all the certificate loaded, and everything's good. So now that I've got the right subscription, and I know I'm working on the right subscription, and basically I run this anytime that I open up PowerShell, I always run this script just to make sure that I'm working on the right subscription, because I don't want to actually, in production, delete or add things to the wrong subscription. That makes people angry. So very similar to what Ganesh showed earlier, we can create a service key, and this is a simple script that shows the service providers, exact same command that Ganesh used. You can see that MSIT shows up as a teleco. So because of that network that I talked about earlier, we've got 513 sites around the world. We've got a pretty good global network right now. And so we actually use our own network as our basically network service provider. So my group, NIS, Network Infrastructure Services, is the telco for Microsoft. So if you were a developer or somebody in HR and you had an Azure subscription that you wanted to connect to CorpNet, you would actually go through my telephone company to actually provision that connectivity between our corporate network and the Azure network. So now we're going to create a circuit. The telephone company that you go through, the network service provider, actually defines the bandwidths for your tunnel. And for MSIT, we've decided to do 128, 256, 512, 768, and 124 for the different speeds. So for this circuit, I'm going to assign it. I've variabilized most of this. I'm going to assign it 128 megabits per second. Right now, this is coming out of our test data center in Columbia, and MSIT is the service provider. So down here, I'm just going to say test circuit 01. And it goes out, it will create that. The nice thing with PowerShell is, with these commands, I'm loading this into a variable called my new key. And with that, because it's now an object, I can actually use that in other instances. So normally what I'll do when I'm doing provisioning production circuits, I've got a little command that copies it to the clipboard just to make it easier to copy that big long GUID and use it in other places. So this is actually creating that circuit, and then it will come back with the key. Eventually. So once this comes out, now I've got a 128 key that's in Columbia. Here's the GUID and MSIT. Now it's not provisioned. So if you recall back to the slide, so now the subscriber, oops, don't click on the slide. The subscriber, me, has talked to Microsoft Azure. A lot of times you'll hear me speak as if Microsoft Azure is a third party. In MSIT, we basically treat them like a third party. We don't do anything that a customer can't do. When we call support, we have to go through our premier channel, so we're like any other company when it comes to that. So there are some areas with the network we could do some back-end magic, but we intentionally don't, so that we can provide a better customer reference and give better feedback to the product group. So they make the dog food, and I have to eat it like any other customer would. So right now, the subscriber, me, has talked to Microsoft Azure. But now I've got to tell the telephone company that, hey, I've got this circuit. I'm a subscriber with Azure. Please connect me. So as I said, we are our own telco. So we, just like the AT&T portal that Ganesh showed earlier, this is the portal that we use internally at Microsoft. I was hoping it was going to be live for this demo, but my developers didn't quite meet the schedule that that we had set for it. So really close. We got successful production tests yesterday done, but I wasn't feeling comfortable enough to do the live demo here, but I will show you a little bit about it. This is going to go live by the end of this month, and basically anybody in Microsoft can connect their internal subscription. So we've got just the opening page that tells folks the whole process. Step three is there's just this portal specifically, and it talks about all of the things that I've just showed you. So where the real meat is on the circuits tab, and this is where any circuit that I'm assigned to will show up. And this is a portal that we've built internally. Any telco that you work with, any network service provider, will have their own portal. So they have to know who you are and have an account with you, just like AT&T did in Ganesh's example. So this is our portal. Internally, we've got security requirements that require that folks agree to certain things. So we validate that you're an internal subscription. You agree to the EULA. We want to make sure that you're not going to do bad things with privacy data. We actually scan your subscription. You have to download that management certificate. Security, our internal security mandates that. And then the developer or the person who wants to connect the subscription tells us a little bit about where they want it, how many IP addresses they need. In AT&T's example, they don't control our IP addresses, but since we're the central IT group for Microsoft, we do control the IP. So we can add the added benefit of providing IP addresses. So when this is actually flipped to on, this portal will assign IP addresses to you. It will actually go to our internal routers on site, program those routers to with the BGP sessions needed to connect to Azure, and then go out through the Azure APIs and configure the network on their side. So this is completely automated SDN for our internal network and the Azure network. No human involvement. We work with our change management system to log tickets. It's registered. It's approved. If we have change freezes, the tickets will stop and the process will stop. So it's integrated with our normal processes, but it is completely automated. And like I said, I really wished I could show the demo because when it does work, it takes about 7 minutes to actually provision that circuit connectivity. So with this, these IP addresses, now I can go out to my subscription and create my virtual network out in Azure. So this is be the third step. So if there's anything in here that you don't catch, this is being recorded. You can go back and look at the Channel 9 recording of this, and you can see the code on the screen there. So here, basically, if I was starting from scratch and had nothing, these are the things that I would need to do to set this subscription up. That would be create an affinity group. The affinity group basically gets you to a certain area in the Azure region that you're at. This is going to become less important with future releases, but for now, this lets Azure know where your virtual gateway is, where your storage account is, where your VM resources are going to be, so that it's all coordinated properly in the Azure region. Then the next thing, good management behavior, is to name a storage account, give it something a little user-friendly to use, and then we'll create the virtual network. And I'm going to go into that briefly and then show you the working VM. The last step in this is to actually create a gateway. I'm not actually going to run that command. That takes about 20 minutes, and I think I've got about 5 minutes left. So I'll kick this off, creates the affinity group, creates the storage account, and then it uploads the XML configuration. So what is the XML configuration? If you look at your Azure subscription, there's a network tab. And in that network tab, you've got all of the different virtual networks that you've created. You can do everything that I'm going to do through the portal itself. I think you can do everything. But the XML file for me, just as a programmer, is much easier to work with. What Azure will do, there's an export button at the bottom of the screen. You can export your entire network configuration in a single XML file and then manipulate that XML and upload that back. For me, again, it's just a lot easier than using the wizards on the portal, but the wizards work, very intuitive. But I like to do things in XML. I'm an engineer, I do things the hard way. So this is what my XML file looks like. I've obfuscated the DNS servers a little bit because those are actual production for real on the network DNS servers. But the rest are the virtual networks that are in Azure. The O1 network is the one that I'm building right now, and the O2 is already there, and that's just there for the purposes of this demo. But you can see each of these networks, and then they connect. We designate a gateway to connect to. If you were doing virtual networking, you would see IPsec here. But all of the stuff is documented on the web, fairly easy to put together. We set up our first tunnel. It was really suspiciously quick, and it worked. So this is the XML file that we created. And now if I look back at my subscription, I see that O1 network that didn't exist before. And in that, it's got my DNS servers that I had before, all the IP addresses. I had loaded in the XML file the addresses from the web page that I got. So these are the IP addresses that my service provider provided to me, which is me, which is a little strange for this demo, but that's all right. So this XML file got uploaded and the network created. The last step, if you recall, so now I have a virtual network. The last thing that I need to do is step number four is I've got the circuit and I've got the virtual network. I need to bring them together. So this is the last step that actually gives you connectivity. So I've got that on this one, which this is a separate window, so I need to run that again. And it's a simple command where basically you say this is the VLAN or the VNet and the service key. And I just basically say create a new link. Run that and it will connect them. Something that I didn't mention is once you load the ExpressRoute commands in PowerShell, I'll go back to the other window. Once you load, they actually show up not in the Azure module. You'll see an Azure loaded there, but they actually have a dedicated ExpressRoute module, and here are all of the commands for it. I use the ISE environment for PowerShell just because I'm lazy. But you can get really good help and information. If you are a REST programmer and you want to learn how to do something over here in the REST API, you can always turn the debug on, and that will actually show you the REST API calls that the PowerShell is calling. So you can turn that into something that programmatic in C# or VB.NET or whatever compiled language you want to use. So let's see if this is done. All right, so this is done. I should have good connectivity between this VM that I have already created. And I created this VM, I think, 2 days ago. It was joined to the corporate network, so I joined the domain. We have some internal configurations that we run to make it an IT standard, IT compliant image. So it has all of our group policies, all of our domain admins on it. And basically, we've also turned off all endpoints. I forgot to mention this. Most of those 40,000 servers that I talked about are internally facing. And right now, our internal security department doesn't want us turning on the internet just yet. Probably in another month, we're working on our security policies and security controls on how we want to handle internet connectivity. But right now, we turn off all external endpoints. So until I connect it to ExpressRoute, there's no way to connect to this VM. It's completely isolated from the outside world. But because it is on a network with my private IP address range, I can now get to this from my corporate network. So this machine is VPN'd into my corporate network back in Redmond. Here's the see if the proof works. This is the IP address for that server. I'm using my domain credentials. So this is in the West US Azure region. I'm connecting from my corporate network. This has no inbound internet connectivity. You can see the Azure script up in the upper right-hand area. That's what Azure puts when it creates the VM. And then this in the background, that's what our IT image places, just to let me know what the latest security packs, and we call it an IPAC internally, that has all the driver updates and group policies, software agents, virus, malware, all of those things to make sure that this is a secured server. But this is just a part of my... Right, you can see it's part of the redmond.corp.microsoft.com domain. That's our internal Active Directory domain. It's just a server on my network. If you were a developer in Redmond or Dublin or anywhere else on our network around the world, you would remote desktop to this server like any other server in the data center. Does anything that a server in the data center does. The beauty is, it runs on a VHD, so if this was Beverage Tracker, all we have to do with Beverage Tracker, it's a very simple app, I stop the VHD on-prem, I copy it up to a storage account in Azure, I turn it on, Beverage Tracker just got migrated to the cloud. So it's a fairly easy, fairly easy process to do. All right, so I will switch over. Do you need network? So with that, thank you very much for your time. I'm going to turn it over to Jay from the Store Simple, TSP from California. Take it away.
Thanks, guys. Cool. So I'm no expert in PowerShell or REST API stuff. So I like simple stuff, and hence we named the product Store Simple also, right, to simplify storage. Essentially, what is happening in the existing data center, right? Unstructured data set is increasing. People are not deleting. They can create and configure tons and tons of data set. It could be media component or just user files, right? And because of that, what is happening is the existing storage infrastructure is duplicating that data set. They're sitting on the primary data set. You replicate it to your tier two data centers and then eventually probably to the tape infrastructure. So the same data set is getting replicated multiple times. And because of that, the access pattern also changes. It's been accessed frequently more on your primary tier, and as it moves to the secondary disk tier and eventually to the tape, the need to access that data set is completely eliminated. So where does StoreSimple come in, and how are we helping you reduce this footprint? So if you're looking at having a disaster recovery site, or looking for, there's the need to have a large storage pool, looking to eliminate tape infrastructure, or if you're looking to upload massive data into Azure, that's where we're coming in and trying to reduce the complexity. So what is StoreSimple, right? Essentially, it's a 2U or a 4U storage hardware solution sitting in your data center, or now it could be in one of our service providers like Equinix, and it does four things at a very high level. Number one is it ensures that whatever your users or applications are accessing most frequently is sitting on that local storage, which is essentially StoreSimple in this case. Number two, it has the archival intelligence built in. So once the local storage capacity is full and you start pumping in more and more data set, we will ensure the less frequently accessed data is the only thing that starts steering into Azure. The users that are accessing their current files or the application accessing is still sitting on that local hardware. At the same time, now since we are controlling so much data set, the request comes in, what about data protection? So we do have what your traditional storage vendors would currently provide, concepts of local snapshots on the hardware, or something called Cloud Snapshot, where you have a truly independent copy now residing in Azure through which you can do disaster recovery if needed be. And finally, the most important use case now, which ExpressRoute is enabling and a lot of my customers are interested, is I'm running this massive archival infrastructure in my environment, or I have this file share use case for media and healthcare verticals. What happens if the data center goes down, or if there is a disaster? I'm going to show you a demo on how quickly you can actually migrate that and start running it in Equinix, or directly have it running in one of your secondary data centers if you decide through the ExpressRoute network now. So this is the end-to-end architecture, right? It's again, simplicity was the key goal on designing Store Simple. Essentially, it's an ice cozy SAN in which your application servers, think about file share in this case, connected via ice cozy to Store Simple. And at the back end, it is all HTTPS traffic going through ExpressRoute into Azure. Or it could be your public LAN in your data center going into Azure. So there's not much component in configuration. It's an easy plug-and-play device. With that, let me get into what have we currently done that tested what Ganesh mentioned. We have been working on this since last month and a half on configuring this. Is from your data center, right, you could leverage the ExpressRoute internet connectivity, the connectivity now, and ensure that Store Simple leverages the link and pushes all this unstructured data set. It could be massive. Our media customers, healthcare customers who have terabytes and petabytes of data set, which they truly need to archive. And the number one use case which they're considering is have multiple of these Store Simple devices running in our partner Equinix, and then just uploading it from there directly into Azure. The reason they are looking at Store Simple is for two things. One, any data set coming onto Store Simple, we do inline deduplication and compression. So we are helping you reduce your footprint and your eventual cost on the Azure storage consumption. And secondly, you maintain that there is a component of encryption that we do. So you as a customer are holding the encryption key, and all the data or backup leaving Store Simple into Azure gets fully encrypted, leveraging that. So let me jump into the demo quickly and then leave some time for Q&A. Okay, so think about this infrastructure that I currently have sitting in my data center. So this is a Visio. This shows where my ADDNS is running in Azure currently. The Store Simple is sitting in one of the Equinix data center in the Silicon Valley that we've been talking about. And all this routing, these guys already showed you how simple it is with a couple of PowerShell commands, you can have this configuration ready to go. Store Simple itself is a 10-minute install, which can get you online and get connected into Azure. I have the same infrastructure, which is running in my Mountain View campus, which is this .11 IP address, hosting a file share. And all it is doing, let me reconnect. Quickly. So this is where it's connected to Store Simple in my Mountain View campus. It is connected using my public internet into Azure, and that what we have done is configured a 5 gig file share. So this is where my data is residing, and what I have done is something called Cloud Snapshot. From this Store Simple device sitting in my Mountain View data center, I have backed this up into Azure currently. Assuming there was a disaster recovery and this data center had to go down, I actually now rely on this entire setup that is sitting in Equinix, leveraging ExpressRoute, and is connected to the same storage account in Azure. So how quickly can I restore that data in this particular device? So I'm going to log into the Store Simple sitting in the Equinix data center currently. And disaster recovery in Store Simple is essentially a three-step process. Number one is there is the identity of your primary appliance that you transfer to your DR appliance. You import the intelligence of the cloud snapshot down and then restore the volume. So in this device, I have already, in interest of time, I have exported the configuration from that primary device in the Mountain View campus. And all I'm going to do is import that configuration in my DR device. This is the configuration I saved yesterday. And now it is telling me which is your storage account in Azure that you want to go and import. We give the flexibility that you want to import all or nothing, and you pick and choose. Because during disaster recovery, some data set could be important versus others, and you want to go and download the most critical data first. So all I'm going to do is uncheck all the other parameters, just select the cloud credential configuration and the volume group which has the snapshot. Once this is done, I will be able to essentially see the cloud snapshot, which is nothing but my backup in Azure that was taken through my DR device. I go to my cloud credentials. This is where it shows me it was actually imported from a device in Mountain View. Okay. There. So this is where I'm actually running a production file share in Equinix, which is just acting as another file share. And this is my imported configuration. So all I need to do now is go under my data protection and backups. I will be able to see a snapshot, which actually I took during my session yesterday at 1:30 p.m. on just StoreSimple. So in case you want deeper dive StoreSimple, you could definitely refer to that session. Okay, let me log in. Sorry about that. Oh, network. It should take 2 minutes. So while that happens, while the connectivity comes back on, just to, in the interest of time, I'll do some slides. So what are the three typical use cases where we see this application work, right? The first one is traditional file share, where you're hosting your file share in your environment. You want It's a massive, there's global users traveling, and you want a central point for your entire unstructured data set. You could now have a StoreSimple device sitting in Equinix and have your entire file share residing there and give access, as these guys showed, through to your application and users and ensure the speed, the connectivity, and the predictability that ExpressRoute provides is available for your users. So file shares and large archivals is the primary use case where a lot of StoreSimple customers are looking at ExpressRoute. The second use case is mainly around the Azure compute. I have moved my applications into Azure. I still want to leverage the intelligence, the dedupe compression of StoreSimple, and start storing my data set into the storage blob pool. So that is the other use case where media customers, large file uploads that they want to do, they want to migrate all their tape infrastructure into Azure. How can they do that? You can have multiple StoreSimple devices running in the partner data centers, have your compute running in Azure, and start accessing that data set. And the final and the most important, the demo I was trying to finish off, was essentially you have existing StoreSimple in your environment. You could sign up with ExpressRoute directly connected to your data center or through Equinix and other providers. And if your primary site goes down or there, for some reason you need to invoke your disaster recovery, you could bring that entire infrastructure in Equinix and the compute in Azure and still have connectivity for your users or applications and bring them online quickly. So these are typically the scenarios that our customers have started testing and looking into implementing in production. So with a minute left, I'm going to sort of get into the resources slides and call to action. Ganesh, if you want to finish it up.
Thanks, Jay. Yeah. Thanks, Jay. So, hey, everyone. I hope with John presenting and with Jay here, you got a good taste of how you could use ExpressRoute to accomplish and meet all your needs from the cloud perspective. So it gives you a secure connection that facilitates, you know, really enables you to accomplish what you really want to do with the cloud. So I've just presented this slide where it has all the relevant information that you need to go through to get tutorials. If you really want help setting it up, working with a partner, you can reach out to us through this alias, and we would be happy to talk to you and help you with that. If you have any questions for StoreSimple, you can either email that alias or go to the StoreSimple site and get more information. So with that, I'd like to have John and Jay up here, and we'd take any questions that you have for a few minutes. Thank you. I'm sorry, yeah. I can't hear you. Can you come to the mic, please?
With the storage account URL that accesses a blob objects, and that's like a public-facing type URL, how do you make sure that goes over the express route connection as opposed to going out via your public, you know?
So the question was about the public storage URL to get to the blobs and storage. How do you make that private over express route?
Is yeah, so how do you ensure it doesn't mean, is it a routing configuration on our side, or is it, you know?
It's the same public IP address. We route traffic through the IP through the express route circuit to the same public IP address. We advertise precise prefixes to you through the express route circuit. So packets will prefer, you know, the routes will prefer the more precise prefix, which will be through the express route circuit,
yep.
And you'll have connectivity. We will make sure that it's routed through our network and handed off to you to the storage endpoint.
Okay, so we should only be billed for the internal type traffic, I suppose, as opposed to the higher charge. All right, on the express route side, will you ever support VSS, HSRP, any other sort of layer 2 spanning type configurations?
So we realize that router redundancy protocols are hard for us to sustain at scale. That's why we have two independent BGP sessions. Having two independent BGP sessions gives us the robustness and stability that, you know, something like HSRP or VRRP can give you.
How about just on the layer 2 spanning sort of things? Will you ever allow it, or EOMPLS?
We do VLAN peering with a partner, so we are technology VLAN VPN technology agnostic. So it could be VPLS, MPLS, frame relay, whatever they support.
Yep. I can stretch my internal network range into Azure as a complete layer 2 span.
Yep. It's just a VLAN to us.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
Thank you.
Any plans to also allow, besides Azure connectivity, Office 365 connectivity?
So at this point in time, we are announcing connectivity for Azure. Stay tuned for more updates.
Do you support the Cisco DMVPN technology?
Sorry, what?
The Cisco DMVPN technology to connect to Azure. That's kind of like a MPLS type connection over VPN connection, over internet.
VPLS, is that what it is?
No, it's called DMVPN. It's a way in which to create an MPLS connection.
Yeah, it's dynamic multipoint VPN. They don't support
I haven't heard of it. So.
No?
No.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Cool, thank you. So if you have any questions, we'll hang out here. We'd be happy to talk to you.